Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Missiles in flight, threat, counter-threat, and fires burning from the economy to California this week. Iran flexed military muscle and hit the long-range test fire launch button. Here's the sound from Iranian state TV. Could be garbage cans in the basement, but we don't think so. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice fired back with an American warning.
We take very, very strongly our obligation to help our allies defend themselves, and no one should be confused about that.
And California wildfires continue to rage. 1,100 square miles now burned. Here's one weary firefighter.
Weather and Mother Nature are hard to contend with out here. We're pretty tired. We've been out for 21 days now.
This hour, On Point, our news roundtable goes behind the headlines. Joining me today from Washington is Nina Easton, Washington editor for Fortune magazine and political analyst for Fox News. Her cover piece for the new issue of Fortune is called What Obama Means for Business. Also on the cover, McCain and the Economy. Nina, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Joining us also from Washington is Jibby Martinez, contributing writer at Politico and Politico.com. She's been writing a lot about Latinos in this election, Obama and McCain both reaching out on that front this week. Jibby, great to have you back as well.
Thank you for the invitation.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello to our guests.
Nina Easton, first to you, the economy. I mean, just one thing after another here. And now Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, these giant mortgage lenders, people worried they don't have enough capital, stock markets all over the place, their shares tumbling. Are we moving into yet another phase of the economic woe that we've seen, apparently, Phil Graham's comments aside, and we'll talk about them, but are we moving into another phase of the trouble that Washington and everybody else has been fighting?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Tom, because last summer I spoke with Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson about these problems as they were emerging. And it was as he said, we don't know how deep or how prolonged this is going to be because this is such a complex financial problem. I mean, these mortgages, as we know now, have been sliced and diced and packaged in all sorts of different ways through Wall Street. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are big players in this, which were at one point considered sort of safe institutions. Even though they're not government backed, they have the aura of being government backed, and now they're feeling it as well. So it's one of these pieces of the economy that's going to continue to play out. We're still not officially. As we don't know yet that we're actually in a recession, but there's a lot of obviously bad news on the horizon that both presidential candidates are having to address.
It's the scariest unrecession that I've ever seen. Can you just explain what's up with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? They make mortgage loans or they back mortgage loans, and you say it's not government backed, but there's talk now that the government may have to bail them out at some gigantic cost.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that certainly the administration has wanted to avoid getting in too deep. There was a big argument earlier this year about whether Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, stepping back a second, what they do is they will purchase mortgages up to a certain amount, and by virtue of the fact that they have these sort of government, they are government creatures, the mortgages that they purchase, it lends a sense of safety and stability in the markets.
A sense.
There was a big argument earlier about whether you should raise the caps on the amount that they can purchase, or you could even raise the number of mortgages in there. Now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have had all sorts of accounting problems and all sorts. There's a lot of reform that the administration, actually, and a lot of people in Congress thought that was needed before you should let Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae be bigger players in the market. So that's certainly something that's on the table and having sort of coming back to haunt the entire market.
Yeah. Yeah, all kinds of talk on that front and, of course, what it means in the presidential campaign, whether or not the campaigners are up to addressing this. Jack Beatty, Phil Graham, friend of and advisor, national co-chairman of John McCain's campaign, has been talking about this. He says we've become a nation of whiners on the economic front.
Yes, he says that we have a mental recession. Our problems are all in our heads. The economy is really doing fine. And, you know, John McCain has spoken of him as an economic genius. There's substantial evidence that the McCain economic plan, important parts of it, was written by Senator Graham. Senator Graham, we recall, and we should recall every time we go to the gas pump, was the one who opened up the Enron exemption in the in Congress that allowed speculation in the markets on oil. He also, of course, was involved again through a regulatory intervention in the mortgage crisis on the wrong side. So when John McCain joked that that Senator Graham is apt to be appointed ambassador to Belarus,
Belarus, the furthest planet. Yeah. It took McCain about 2 seconds to come out and say, forget about that. Phil Graham had said, we have a sort of become a nation of whiners. You just hear this constant whining, complaining about a loss of competitiveness, America in decline. McCain comes out and says, America is in great difficulty, and we are experiencing enormous economic challenges as well as others. Phil Graham, of course, got Barack Obama's attention right away, too. He came out with a kind of a funny jab here in Virginia yesterday.
I want all of you to know that America already has one Dr. Phil. We don't need another one when it comes to the economy. We need somebody to actually solve the economy. It's not just a figment of your imagination.
No more psychoanalysis from Dr. Phil, not this one anyway. Jibby Martinez, how do you see it? How do you hear it out there in the country? Do you think Americans see, feel economic uncertainty at best, maybe, as a, just a kind of a, you know, bad attitude?
Oh, look, voters out there really are concerned about the economy. They feel it every day. They, you know, feel the pinch at the pump, as we've talked about many times before. Mm. What was interesting about Phil Graham's comment is that, you know, he was brought in to shore McCain's credentials. And let's not forget that McCain was against the Bush tax cuts because he thought it was bad for the economy, and Graham was very much for them. And so, in a way, what I thought was interesting about yesterday was McCain had this sort of gut reaction to say, no, wait a minute, we have to think about the people here. And, you know, people are criticizing him for having forgotten that that's where he started out, you know, before he ran in this presidential race. He was more concerned in his economic policies with what would happen to those that do not make the top 1% of the economy.
That would be 99%. Nina, you've been talking with Barack Obama about his economic plans. When you're looking at the problems growing out there, we're all paying attention to both their programs now. Do they intersect? Do the answers being provided on the campaign trail seem appropriate to the challenges we're up against?
Yeah, let me address that. If I could, I wanted to go back and be politically incorrect here and push back a little bit at Jack. I'm not defending Phil Graham to the extent to which he went on his comments, but there is something here, which is that the anxiety that voters have expressed predates these current economic problems, and it's been a puzzle and something that I've written about, something that Robert Samuelson's written about, other people have written about, that people feel worse than the statistics, the numbers, the economic indicators should lead to.
But maybe that's just what Jibby's pointing
to. And I think a lot of the economy, there is something to be said for a lot of economic decisions are psychological decisions, and certainly Wall Street's largely based on a lot of psychological sensibility. And that to say that, you know, people sort of feel bad and that makes the economy worse and then the report and the media just reports on bad news, there is something to that. We have 24-hour cable now that just, you know, beats the drum on bad news.
What about the 1% that's getting so much of that, Nina? From Fortune magazine, what Barack Obama says is, yes, there was growth, but so much of it is going into so few pockets, it's not surprising.
Right.
The overall numbers may look good, but where's it going?
And one of the arguments about sort of underlying this economic anxiety is this question of middle class squeeze. And that brings me to Barack Obama, who I interviewed just a couple weeks ago and spent half an hour alone with. the basics of Barack Obama's plan are to address this middle class squeeze. The narrative of his story on the economy is that because Bush did not address the middle class squeeze, people started dipping into their homes and started using, you know, equity from their homes and so forth to cover the purchases they would have, you know, covered with salaries and income and so forth, and that helped lead to this mortgage crisis. And he says, you know, the next thing that could happen is a credit card crisis. So what he wants to do is alter the tax code so that the tax cuts are directed at the middle class. Mm-hmm. And the middle class, in his mind, are families of making less than $250,000 a year. So that's where he's going. That's really the basics of his economic plan that haven't changed.
John McCain, who now supports continuing the tax cuts he opposed before, saying you've got to keep them going. I heard Carly Fiorina this morning saying on his behalf, if you take those away, you're going to hurt small business, and that will hurt job creation.
Enough, Jimmy wanted to jump. Just one quick thing. Barack Obama also says he might reconsider doing away with tax cuts, at least temporarily, if it would hurt the economy. He's expressed some, you know, openness about this. But I'll let Jimmy jump in.
Yeah. One more point. It is argued that we don't know how many small businesses would actually benefit because small businesses, in fact, don't make that much income to benefit from keeping the tax cuts.
We'll come back and look at that and much more. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news this hour. Iranian missiles, economic tumult, an eavesdropping bill, and more. Jimmy Martinez joins us from Politico.com. Nina Easton is here from Fortune Magazine. Jack Beatty's here. Let's get a call right here from Steve in Boston. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
And I do think it's all in our heads about the economy. The unemployment rate's about 5%, which is just like it was during the Clinton years when it was a booming economy, it was called. We haven't had any negative quarter yet of negative growth, which is the definition of a recession, really. You know, there's millions of people coming here every year, legally and illegally, for work and opportunity. I just don't see, I see the corrections going on, but to me, the economy is fine. So the housing market's gone down. Well, it was overinflated to begin with.
So what does that mean to you in campaign terms, presidential terms, or policy terms? Keep on keeping on or change course, Steve?
I want to change course personally because I'm just sick of Republicans in the White House. And I like what Obama represents as far as change, the youthfulness of him and the radical change. I like that. But the economy, I think, is just going through a normal correction like it's done before, and I think things are pretty good.
Take a chill pill. Wait for your 401k statement. Yeah, Jack?
It isn't in the head that we have just finished a recovery, the first one, I think, in history in which the average family income went down by about $1,000. That's never happened before. Mm-hmm. Usually, a rising tide lifts all boats. This rising tide swamped most boats. So that was in the recovery. Now we're in the downturn. What's going to happen now? So that fact can't be gainsaid. And of course, that's just the tip of the iceberg of American economic insecurity. There's the export of jobs. There's fears about health care. There's the mortgage crisis. And so these are real matters. They're not in people's heads.
Let's hear what the candidates have to say about it. This week in Arlington, Virginia, John McCain was talking about his economic plan and sharply criticizing Barack Obama's platform.
Senator Obama's tax increases will hurt the economy even more and destroy jobs across the country. If you are one of the 23 million small business owners in America who files as an individual ratepayer, Senator Obama is going to raise your tax rates. If you have an investment for your child's education or own a mutual fund or a stock in a retirement plan, he's going to raise your taxes. He will raise estate taxes to 45%. I propose to cut them to 15%.
John McCain on Obama. We'll hear from Obama. But Nina Easton, first, did I hear you say that Barack Obama may be reconsidering his plans to let those Bush tax cuts go away?
No, he's not reconsidering them. But what he did say was that he'd reconsider the timing of them if the economy was still in bad shape. This is part of what Barack Obama has been doing, whether you want to call it repositioning himself towards the middle or just emphasizing more what he said on the campaign trail was his politics of practicality, not his politics of ideology. But he is trying to look just really in rhetoric and nuance, trying to look a little bit more centrist.
But I want to clarify, because you sat with him. Are you suggesting that he's saying now that he might not roll back those Bush tax cuts?
No. And again, that's wrong. No, he didn't say that. He didn't say this to me, by the way. He said it to CNBC, that particular thing. He talked to me about NAFTA. He changed a bit on NAFTA, and we can talk about that. But on the tax cuts, all he said was he might reconsider the timing of them. And so, but that's the extent of it.
Timing is everything in Texas, in a way. Yeah. Let's hear him for just a minute, if I may. I'll come to you, Jibby and Jack, but Barack Obama's at our tape door here, punching back at John McCain's economic plans this week, saying the McCain's out of touch.
John McCain doesn't have an answer to the housing crisis. He doesn't have an answer to the education crisis. He doesn't have a plan to rebuild our infrastructure. The only plan that he's got, the only plan that he has is to not only continue the Bush tax cuts to wealthy corporations, he wants to increase them. His plan's essentially the Bush plan, plus $300 billion in tax breaks that almost all go to corporations.
Jibby Martinez, here's one Obama theme that does not change: McCain as continuation of Bush.
That's happening on a lot of different issues. But one thing I want to say about this economy and why Obama's message does seem to resonate is because the McCain tax plan talks and addresses people who file income taxes. And Obama is also trying to look at those people who are unemployed and don't make enough money to have to file an income tax. And one of the reasons why this recent rebate tax refund program worked was because if you think it did work, it's because they did allow some money to go back to people who don't file income taxes, including senior citizens. So while Obama and McCain are arguing about this out on the campaign trail, we're seeing in Congress that the Democrats want to do another tax refund. They see it as a good, election year strategy for them, and they think that that would also help jumpstart the economy, especially when we're still seeing a lot of people getting laid off from their jobs.
Jack, now you've got John McCain having to straddle a little bit with Phil Graham poo-pooing the troubles and him saying, no, they're very real. That's an awkward position.
It is an awkward position, and there are some questions about this McCain economic program. Barack Obama mentioned the $300 billion in new tax cuts McCain proposes. In addition, he'd make the Bush tax cuts permanent. Those alone would bring the budget deficit to about $400 billion in 2013. $300 billion plus $400 billion equals $700 billion. To balance the budget, McCain would have to come up with that amount. Now how? Well, he says, by cutting earmarks and freezing the federal budget. But the Heritage Foundation, conservative, finds that would only save about $50 billion. Where would he get the other $650 billion? Well, the Center for American Progress estimates he could eliminate 10 departments of the federal government, from agriculture to treasury, still come up about $50 billion short. Fox asked a McCain economic spokeswoman to comment on that. She said the McCain tax cuts would stimulate enough economic growth to fill that $650 billion hole by 2013. But to accomplish that, growth would have to average 8% a year.
We'd be steaming. Now,
which happened only once before, during World War II. In the written version of his speech this week, McCain promised to balance the budget in the first term, but he dropped that from his spoken remarks as if he was afraid of furnishing a risible soundbite to the Obama campaign.
Nina, your headline says Obama insists he just wants to show corporate America some tough love. He plans to make the U.S. a land of opportunity once again. But you say that his numbers don't exactly add up either, that he hasn't answered how he's going to pay for everything.
He hasn't. I mean, one of the, I think, disappointments about Obama is, in contrast to somebody like Bill Clinton, who brought to the table some fairly new ideas, at least for the Democratic Party at the time, not new ideas, but challenged his party's orthodoxy on it. Obama hasn't really done that. I mean, he mostly addresses the problems of the nation by government spending, whether we're talking about on, you know, energy or, a host of issues, Social Security, raising the payroll tax, which, you know, is something that probably should be discussed. But, you know, that's his
raising the cap on the payroll tax.
Raising the cap. Well, imposing payroll taxes on people of higher income. People of higher incomes would pay.
Mm-hmm. Keep it rolling up to higher income. Yep.
Yeah, without getting too in the weeds here. Yeah.
it doesn't feel too in the weeds when it comes out of your paycheck, I guess. Let's go to Alan in New London, New Hampshire. Alan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
In terms of things being in my head, the economic difficulties. Mm-hmm. I just wanted you guys to know that my heating bill was $1,800, over $3,000 this year. Mm. My food costs were a couple of years ago about $400 a month. They're going to be $700 a month. These are pretty real things. I don't see my income up to match that. Dr. Phil seems like he's saying, you know, suck it up, peasants. I really don't appreciate it.
Suck it up, peasants. Wow. Okay. Or at least give it a head check. And, of course, now we've got $147 a barrel oil, in part because of the tension in the Middle East, Iran firing the test-fired long-range missiles this week and sounding very, very bellicose. Don't mess with us, them saying. Condoleezza Rice in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia this week talking about those missile tests. Here's some tape of her trying to encourage Iran to cool off.
Iran can take up and get on the right side of the international community. And it ought to be talking about that, not about threats against America or threats against America's allies, because, frankly, it's not going to do them any good.
Jibby Martinez, what do you see in this back and forth? Israel very hot, the U.S. hot in its response, saying, you know, we will defend our allies in Iran, blast after blast, even though some of them turned out to be doctored into the photos, photoshopped in, some missiles did fly.
Well, and I think what's interesting is the government is still trying to figure out what Iran meant by this, because just a week earlier they were talking about negotiations, and so they're thinking that, well, maybe they were talking negotiations and they're showing us their, you know, weaponry so that we can all get to the table. What I also thought was really interesting was that the two campaigns responded in a way that really reflected the tone of their campaigns. Senator McCain's statement talked about how we have to stand up to security threats around the world and, you know, sounding really tough on Iran. And Senator Obama, on the other hand, stressing diplomacy, that we need to really move very forcefully into diplomatic posture. So I thought that the campaigns showed the tone of how they want to proceed on foreign policy. And I think that the government showed that it's still trying to figure it out.
Let's go to Don in Buffalo, New York. Don, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about Iran and the, quote, saber-rattling they've been doing. And I'd just like our public to remember that the Shah of Iran was, you know, more than likely at least supported by the United States, if not installed. We had an Iranian revolution where they grabbed our people, made us look bad. It was very difficult for everyone. But we have had Iraq contained after the Gulf War, and we chose to go back in, and the United States destabilized that area. The rest of the United States, the rest of that world didn't think it was a good idea. Why shouldn't Iran feel nervous? I mean, imagine if the Soviet Union took over or undermined the Canadian government through military force, and then they started talking tough with us.
But everyone says Iran is in a stronger position in Iraq now, and, I mean, how can you see the what appears to be steady work on developing nuclear weapons and firing long-range missiles, that's the definition of saber-rattling.
Okay, I can easily respond to that. Mm-hmm. Everyone in their neighborhood, China, India, Israel, the United States, Russia, all have nuclear weapons. I'm not saying they should. I don't advocate them, going in that direction, but they also are a very energy-conscious nation. All I want to do is say, let's put this shoe on the other foot. Let's look at the argument the other way. What if this was in our neighborhood? And with a sort of sarcastic joke, what nerve does Iraq and Iran have having our oil underneath their soil?
Yeah, what
nerve? I'll put it to you.
Okay, Don in Buffalo, thanks for your call. Nina Easton, we're going to look more at this on Monday, what's really going on here. But no matter how, whether you look at it economically, those oil prices are way up again on the threat of Iran to go after shipping in the Persian Gulf. The tensions
right.
are real. The history's real. Don's right, but so are the tensions.
Well, except I'd love to ask Don how he would feel about Ahmadinejad having a nuclear weapon at his fingertips. I mean, that, you know, whichever. I think what all of this reminds us this week is who's ever president is going to walk into the office, Oval Office in January, and be faced with a very, very grave potential crisis of Iran getting nuclear weapons and how to stop that. Secondly, this is something, as again, as we're seeing this week, this is so tied into energy. The head of OPEC just yesterday warned against any conflict in the area. Any attacks on Iran would just send the price of oil through the roof. Mm. Don't even think about it, he said. So that's all tied. And of course, the energy prices are tied to how our economy is doing. And neither candidate, I mean, but whatever we think of either candidate's energy policies, these are fairly long-term policies. I mean, whether you're drilling or promoting alternative energy, it's going to be some time before we're energy independent. Mm. And so these are really serious issues that's going to face the next president.
J.B. Martinez, I want to bring it back home for a minute. Both candidates going very hard in recent weeks and this week after the Latino vote. How's McCain doing? How's Obama doing?
Well, obviously, they're both wanting to get the Latino vote because it has grown so much since the last presidential election. And they really are large enough in some key battleground states to determine the outcome. So you see McCain, who actually has a very long history with the Latino community and working on their issues, finding himself the underdog against Obama, who did very poorly against Hillary Clinton in the primaries. At this point, I think one of the things that's happening is the debate over immigration, which, while not a top priority for Latino voters, is an issue that, because of its tone, motivates them to the polls. This week, Senator McCain did what I would not call a flip-flop, but a zigzag. Mm-hmm. He goes out in public and says that he is for securing the borders first, and then he will do everything else. In private, he tells the leadership of these organizations, look, I really am for comprehensive reform. We just don't have the votes right now, and I can't say it right now. And so they kind of forgive him and don't hold him accountable in public. So it's a really interesting dance that's going on here. He can't say in public that he supports comprehensive reform because he runs the risk of losing the conservative base that he needs to hold on to. So there's a really, really interesting dance that he's doing here, but he is trying to inch his way back. There is a brand new ad that his campaign has released where Senator McCain is talking about the military contributions of Hispanics. And he talks about the Vietnam War Memorial that has the names of Hispanic soldiers on there. And if there is a group of Latino voters that he can get, it is the older veterans. The younger people are very much against the Iraq War, and he'll lose them on that issue. But the older Hispanics who know about past wars and who are very patriotic, as all of them are, but have a deep understanding of McCain's service to the military, and he can relate to those voters.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. Victory, defeat, and cherry chapstick big this week. On Sunday, Rafael Nadal defeated five-time Wimbledon tennis champion Roger Federer in an epic five-set match.
It is official. A changing of the guard at Wimbledon.
Late-night funnyman Conan O'Brien was amused by one encounter at the G8 summit.
President Bush met with the Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. Afterwards, Bush described him as, quote, a smart guy. Yeah, when asked how he knows he's smart, Bush said, he speaks fluent Russian.
Now, okay, and for the third week in a row, the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 is Katy Perry's I Kissed a Girl. It's the all-girl summer rage out there.
I kissed a girl, I liked it. The taste of her cherry chapstick. I kissed a girl, just a
Times are changing out there. News this morning, shares in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac down hugely again, off 36 and 41% respectively. They're the government Bush administration talking about coming in with a government plan to take over both companies and place them in conservatorship. Of course, in that case, any losses on mortgages they own or guarantee, which could be huge, would be paid by taxpayers. Nina Easton is with us from Fortune Magazine, Jibby Martinez from Politico, and Jack Beatty's here. Jack, a political note here on what? The convention's coming up later this summer. Barack Obama says he's going to take his big speech, the closing big night of the Democratic convention, out of the hall and into a stadium, Invesco Field in Mile High City, Denver.
Yes, before 75,000 adulators. You know, also this week, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, she voiced unease about the Obama campaign's reputed request to have Barack address a throng at the Brandenburg Gate. And you know, these mass events should cause some unease, I think. In a democratic republic, a presidential candidate should comport himself with the plebeian dignity, not like a charismatic leader whose authority rests on incantation instead of the vote of the people. You know, instead of an acceptance speech, I hope McCain in Minneapolis holds a town hall meeting, a ceremony of democracy to contrast with the rock star's levitation. And in this connection, McCain, I think, has proposed the best single new idea of the campaign. He promises to appear before Congress regularly to answer for the conduct of his government. Now, that would drain some of the pernicious pomp from the presidency, and I say two cheers for plain John McCain.
But voting and the presidential campaigns are mass events of democracy, aren't they, Jack? I mean, he says he wants change. Open stadium, JFK did it. Brandenburg Gate, Ronald Reagan did it.
Yes, Ronald Reagan was the president. He was not making a campaign appearance. And I just think that we need sober talk about our problems, not mass displays of enthusiasm. This is an unusual event. I well remember John F. Kennedy's speech, but I think we need some reason and argument and evidence, not wild applause.
Speaking of,
and I would say, please, Jack. Oh, please, come on. It's a DNC acceptance speech. Please.
Well, okay.
So, you know, sober, serious discussion. It's a celebration.
It's a PR.
We're going to come down on opposite sides of Invesco Field, I can see there. Well, and so be it. Speaking of sober speech, here's Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin on Wednesday on MSNBC's Countdown with Keith Olbermann, expressing deep regret about the passage of the FISA bill.
This administration, despite its weakness, somehow is able to raise the specter of being, as they say, soft on terrorism. And unfortunately, Democrats who can be so strong on a domestic issue somehow collapse. And that's exactly what happened. This is a terrible piece of legislation. It's one of the greatest assaults on the Constitution, I think, in the history of our country. We are going to have to fix it, but it is a dark hour for the Constitution.
Nina Easton, and there was Barack Obama coming down with a vote for that. Had hoped to have the immunity for telecommunications companies taken out. That didn't happen. He ends up on the record for this bill. Hillary Clinton against it. Will it matter in the election, Nina? Russ Feingold says it matters for our constitutional rights.
I think this matters. I think it's going to be fascinating how this plays out in terms of Barack Obama, because this has been one of a couple areas where he has backed off either positions or rhetoric that he engaged in during the primary campaign. And that also goes to free trade. It goes to death penalty. It goes to his supportive government, supported faith-based programs. It goes to Iraq, where he talked about refining his decision or his thinking about the timetable of withdrawing troops on Iraq after he speaks to the military commanders on the ground. But the FISA thing is so interesting, because if you go on his website, there's the social networking group that is formed around FISA is so angry at him. It's the largest group on a social networking site, and there were people who were saying, "How do I remove my Obama bumper sticker? How do I get off this site? How do I get my money back from Obama? My heart, he's broken the heart of these supporters who were part of his core." Now, question to me is, does that make a difference? He's clearly, you know, shifting on some of these issues because he's really got to get a chunk of those independent, a bigger chunk than John McCain of those independent voters to win. But is he going to lose some of his supporters on the left in the course of doing that? I don't think we know yet. And so I think this is something to watch down the line.
Jibby, what's your interpretation, Tom, there? Yes.
Well, I totally agree with what Nina said, but just taking a broader look at this, you know, both of the candidates have been switching positions on so many key issues so much lately that you really do need a map to plot it all out on a chart or something, you know. But what I do think is also very interesting is that voters are understanding the flip-flop. They get it, and they may not know the finer points of an issue, but they get it. And now with this new media age, they really have a way to respond. And I have to tell you something really interesting that happened in the Obama campaign a couple of weeks ago, where the Spanish language press protested on a conference call with the Obama campaign. They got on and used that as an opportunity to say, look, you know, y'all aren't paying attention to us. We can't get our emails responded. We can't get our phone calls returned.
they got him on the mat and pinned him on that.
Right, right. And the thing is it's kind of like, you know, this is the fastest growing electorate, you know, pay attention to us. And you know, it, you know, not paying attention to them is like, you know, not returning the calls in some cases of, you know, like the New York Times or some other major English language media. And you really see this, people are just kind of standing up and saying, hey, wait a minute, what about me? So on something as special interest as Hispanic press to something as very large as the FISA bill, The candidates have to understand that people really are paying attention and they really are going to follow up if they have any way, whether it's not, maybe it's not on at a town hall meeting, but it will be on their websites, it will be on radio shows, they are going to respond.
Latinos, a rapidly growing part of that electorate, Barack Obama and John McCain both speaking. Here's Obama this week at the League of United Latin American Citizens talking about the country taking responsibility for job and income disparity in the Latino community.
When Latinos lose their jobs faster than almost anybody else, or work jobs that pay less and come with fewer benefits than almost anybody else, if they're working two or three jobs and still don't have health insurance and still don't have retirement benefits, that isn't a Hispanic American problem, that's an American problem, and we have to solve that problem.
Barack Obama this week before a big Latino audience. Let's take a call from Diane in Waterbury, Connecticut. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to point out regarding the criticism of Senator Obama's decision of where to do his acceptance speech.
Yeah.
From what I understand, when he announced that, it was because he understands and appreciates that the people got him where he is, and he wants them, to more of them, to be able to take part in the experience of his acceptance speech. It's like a payback. You put me where I am, and to show my thanks, I want you to be able to listen to me instead of that smaller audience.
Yeah. So do you see the rock star image overwhelming, you know, the substantial president here, or that's not an issue to you? Open the gates and let the people come in.
From everything I know about him, I honestly believe what he's thinking is, I want to give a favor back to them, the people who, the masses who have put me here, and let them be there for it.
Yeah, Diane, we've got it. Jack Beattie, you're getting some pushback here. Do you want to refine your message, sir?
Well, I'll only say that what I was broaching in a tiny way is the thesis of probably one of the most influential works of political science in recent decades, The Rhetorical Presidency by Jeffrey Tullius, published 25 years ago. And effectively, he says that the presidency in the modern age has become a vehicle for mass enthusiasm and for appealing to voters beyond the Congress. And he thinks that it has undermined, and he argues in many ways that it has, our constitutional procedures. And now here's an Obama who, this is his specialty, and I think this is going to be one of the things we have to watch it with if he is elected president. He says he wants to go out and create fires and get the people enthusiastic and put pressure on the Congress.
Yep.
That sounds great, But read Jeffrey Tullius, and you'll see that it isn't all great. Can I just go back to something for a minute, Tom? Mm. On the FISA, McCain himself has flip-flopped all over this thing. He didn't vote on the bill, and one of the reasons he didn't, he was out campaigning, but it would have drawn attention to how many positions he's had on it. In 2004, he says no to a question from Project Vote Smart about illegal NSA programs. From 2005 to 2007, he's still against it. In December 2007, talking to Charlie Savage of the Boston Globe, he says the president has no inherent powers to conduct national security without surveillance without warrants. But then in February, he changes. He's running for president. Now he's for retroactive immunity. He's for the bill. I mean, he has been all over the lot on this Pfizer bill.
A lot of squirming on many fronts. Let's get a call on that front from Charlotte, North Carolina. Ben, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Tom. Well, let me first say that I believe freedom to be an essential liberty, privacy an essential liberty. It concerns me the FISA bill because with 9/11, I don't believe a lack of intelligence was the cause of the problem. And now this is an overreach of government using it as an excuse to conduct warrantless searches. I don't believe that government should really have a right to interject that way. In fact, it should be protecting our privacy.
So which candidate do you think is going to carry the torch for you on that, Ben?
I believe all of Congress is out of step with what should be happening, and they're not really following what the Constitution itself really suggests.
Yeah, Ben, we've got it. Nina, we had Bob Barr on earlier this week, the Libertarian Party candidate, and he had that same line of criticism. But then, you know, McCain didn't vote this time. Jack points to his checkered record here. And Hillary voted against it. But of course, you know, she's free to do. I mean, she's free to do that now that she's out of the race. Do you see this emerging as something that Americans are going to approach as a matter of principle at the ballot box, Nina? A big one.
In short, no. I don't think that this. I think that this animates a small group of people who on the left. I don't think it animates broad swaths of voters. In fact, the polls show it doesn't.
But some on the right, too. We certainly had Bob Barr.
Libertarians as well. Yes, absolutely. I think it animates, you know, these small groups of voters. But I don't think broadly speaking, I think that the message that. Look, you know, that this using these mechanisms have helped protect the U.S. from a terrorist attack since is something that polls show it just resonates with voters more.
Let's get a call from Buffalo and Peter. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
We have a situation where our Secretary of State is indicating that if Israel is attacked by Iran, we're going to retaliate. Now, if we got a problem with $4.25 a gallon gas making a recession, they're going to close the Straits of Hormuz. We're going to have $15 a gallon gasoline, which means a depression for probably 10 years. Why are we supporting this, a country that's considered to be an outlaw state, doesn't follow any UN resolution?
Which country are you referring
Israel,
to, Peter?
Israel.
They
keep telling us, well, we're not going to build new settlements. Every 6 months they build a new settlement. The Gaza Strip is another, it's a modern-day Warsaw ghetto.
If Israel goes to war with Iran, do you think the U.S. will go to war with Iran?
That's what our Secretary of State has said.
And do you think Israel could sit and let Iran develop a nuclear weapon with long-range missiles?
I think if Israel treated the Palestinians as human beings, this problem probably would not exist.
Peter, let us look at it. I've got a report here from Bloomberg.com. Jerusalem Post saying today that Israeli warplanes had practiced over Iraq, adding to speculation the country may be preparing to attack Iran, and oil went up to 146, 147. Nina, this stuff is all tied together. At least that much is inarguable here. If we end up with a war over the Persian Gulf and the Straits of Hormuz, watch out for oil and the economic knock-on effect.
Well, that's right. That's what I was pointing out before. I mean, not even war. I mean, just, you know, the threat of war is clearly having an effect on oil prices right now. And it was interesting. The other thing the head of OPEC said yesterday was he blamed geopolitical tensions for the spike in oil prices. We're all sitting, we've been arguing, you know, for the past many months about, you know, is the spike of oil prices because of supply demand? Is it because of speculators? But that it's clearly the geopolitical tensions are having a big effect on it already.
Jibby, do you expect fireworks before we get to that November election that may affect that election?
Well, you know, I do think that they're trying to see what the Bush presidency is still capable of doing while it's in office. But I think that with regards to the campaign, Senator McCain benefits from this debate because one of the things that he has defined himself as is one who is has national security first in his head. And Barack Obama is untested on this front. So as the debate goes on, it's going to put more pressure on Barack Obama to say what he would do. Remember that during the Democratic primary debates, there was a lot of discussion about this between he and Hillary Clinton. But it's obviously a new debate, and I think that this particular issue helps McCain if he can get the discussion away from the economy and back to national security.
Jack, what do you think? If loaded missiles fly, does it work for McCain or for Obama saying this is where the Bush path has brought us?
Oh, I don't even want to think about it. I'm with Robert Gates, who says a war with Iran would mean our grandchildren would be fighting.
That's a long time off. Let's not fight till then if we can help it, but who knows where we're headed. Jack, great to have you. Have a great weekend. Thanks very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Jibby Martinez at Politico. It's always great to have you. Jibby, come back soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Nina Easton at Fortune. Nina, wonderful to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.